Good evening.
Good evening.
We will begin.
Well, I'm the only one so far.
I know.
Okay. I don't have a question, but you know, sometimes it leads to questions, so
I understand that. But we're going to wait for other people, and we're going to also cover what we didn't cover on Sunday, where we have that to do as well.
Oh, okay. That's good. I didn't get to be with you Sunday.
Well, so that handout you can get. It's on the Unique Astrological Times link. And let me see exactly. It's the last link before the Tishrei holidays. Last link in the Elul section. No, that's not correct. It's in the Elul section. It's the last link before the community morning prayers during Elul. It's titled Tishrei Lessons from Kosher Torah. And we start at the beginning of page 35. On Sunday, we covered pages 30 through the middle of 35. So we're covering a couple of paragraphs in both classes.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and mute.
Okay. And as other people come on, we will make time for questions. Mind you, where we stand is not a statement of physicality. Rather, it means where our minds and souls are. In a relationship to our inner human potential and source. Above usually is a metaphor for another non-physical realm or dimension, where the power of mind rules supreme outside of the influence of finite matter. However, even such a place must have its correlate counterpart here in the physical space. Above, therefore, is a parallel dimensional plane, possibly the one spoken of previously in relationship to the membrane theory in physics today, which according to the secrets of Torah we call Eden, or the Garden of Eden. Yet this dimensional plane has its entrance here in the physical space. Most likely in appropriately protected areas right here on Earth. As the Torah states, there is a revolving sword of fire guarding the way to the Garden of Eden. I believe somebody else came on, so please identify yourself and if you have a question or not.
Brandela.
Good evening, Brandy.
Good
Glad
evening.
You got through this time. Do you
Thank
have a
you.
Question?
No, not really. I was just wondering, you know, we talk about the weather a lot, and I noticed that Hawaii just got through with all of the, or still is still having volcanoes, and now it looks like they're going to be hit by a hurricane. And they said that was very unusual. And I noticed that there's a lot of weather upsets all over. Midwest is getting a lot of rain, and we have a bunch of rain and severe lightning and thunder and everything down in our region. And kind of was wondering what's going on.
Human activity.
Okay.
All of the separation, all of the anger that's being expressed throughout the world, it manifests as weather. It manifests as chaos in people's lives.
Wow.
So I'm going to continue where we left off, and as other people come on, they'll be able to ask questions, or if Randy wants to continue the conversation. But we're on page 35, the second paragraph. We're continuing our class from Sunday.
Okay.
Our relationship with the cosmic energy field that flows from that other dimensional plane to ours defines for us almost everything in life, including our times of death. Indeed, the influx from that other dimension that began our dimension is the secret of life. The original influx ejaculated into our dimension. Then and now is the energy that Torah calls nefesh, and the Chinese call qi or ki. This is pure and raw life force energy, the fundamental power of creation and form. This is the indwelling presence of Hashem imbuing everything in the universe, and in Torah tradition, it is called the Shekhinah. This is why Rosh Hashanah is Judgment Day. And I would say it's an annual Judgment Day to reinforce the idea that this takes place each day, each year. On this day, as we travel through space and time, we return to our place of origin. The original window of Nefesh cosmic energy is there, flowing down in its original abundance. How we stand at that moment in relationship to it defines for us how much of our portion we will be able to maintain for the year. Until our return to that place, there is no greater judgment than this. Yet it is only a metaphor to say that heaven or God is judging us. Rather, it is we ourselves that it is judging ourselves. Our psychological spiritual state in relationship to our true inner higher self, our inner Adam, defines for us our portion and prescribes how we will be influenced over the coming year. Knowing well the full extent of our quantum universe, the Torah forms for us mitzvot that serve as archetypes that enable our true human essence to reconnect with our higher other dimensional source. This happens in a very precise and specified fashion, as do all other things in the laws and ways of nature. The Rosh Hashanah blowing of the shofar is a perfect example of this. We blow the shofar in order to arouse us to inner contemplation and outer repair of bad character and other immoral or illegal behavior. This is not done in some silly symbolic way. It should say, in some silly and symbolic way. There is actually a science to the shofar. Its sounds and the mental contemplations projecting from the brain waves of the one doing the blowing. The shofar is not a musical instrument. It is an instrument of sound. Sound like electromagnetic fields have profound effects upon everything around them. Sound waves can kill, and sound waves can heal. Sound waves can create, and sound waves can destroy. It is said that God created the universe, speaking into being. What God spoke was a unique combination of sounds. Interestingly, modern science believes that the smallest particles of subatomic matter are called strings. Their vibration form larger particles that eventually form atoms, molecules, and the rest of our universe of physical matter. Sound is thus the foundation of our universe. Everything comes forth from it. It is no wonder, then, that the shofar expresses a sound that is primordial. Randy, please mute your phone. Thank you. The shofar creates a sound that speaks to the inner essence of our being. Its sound contains a wealth of information, unknowable and undecipherable to the rational consciousness. Torah dictates that the shofar is to be made from the horn of a kosher animal. The details of making the shofar are not important now. What is important is what the shofar is used for. We blow the shofar during Rosh Hashanah prayers. It is supposed to arouse us to contemplate bettering our lives. While many religious and moral teachings are taught about Rosh Hashanah and the blowing of the shofar, it is only in the guardians of Torah secrets who reveal to us exactly how the blowing of the shofar works to alter human consciousness, and by doing this, alter construct reality. In brief, the language of the Kabbalah states that the Sephirotic face of Bina, called Ima, the supernal mother, is the one who blows the shofar above. She is said to blow the shofar over the head of her son, the Sephirotic face of Tiferet, called Zeranpin. In synagogues today, the shofar is always held with its opening facing up. However, the Kabbalah teaches that its opening is supposed to be facing down, corresponding to the supernal pattern. The guardians of Torah secrets were masters of metaphor. They concealed a tremendous amount of psychological and scientific information within their mystical codes. In order to appreciate the scientific nature of the shofar, and how it influences fluctuations of the cosmic energy fields vibrating on this day, we have to strip the Kabbalistic metaphors of their myths and explain what really happens. The Sephirot Bina is the metaphor used to describe human consciousness. The mind is the mother of being. From the mind comes forth the heart, the seed of emotions, passions, and motivations. The heart is the receptacle that connects the human essence to the earth. Unfortunately, it is also the heart that gets caught up, confused, and misguided. When the heart is led astray, higher human consciousness gets disconnected from the point of consciousness. Active in the human body, mentally disconnected from our higher mind source, we end up becoming trapped on the earth, exiled and lost from our original source. This is the fall of man in Eden. It is a split of the higher mind from what has become the lower mind. This is a form of psychic spiritual schizophrenia. We live in a finite physical reality here on earth, lost and oblivious to our origins and true higher essence. In order to help us repair this breach in consciousness and to direct us home, Torah came to earth. Torah speaks to our hearts and tells us what to do to reconnect our hearts, minds, and souls. Torah speaks the language of the soul, the higher self, which now resides within the unconscious part of our minds. Mitzvot reverberate universal truths of natural law. They are not metaphors. They are actual scientific formulas for the transformation of consciousness that enables us to evolve from being present-day Homo sapien man to a future Homo superius man. The heart is metaphorically called Tiferet, Zerampin, the small face of God. This is because it reflects the supernal image above. Lower man was formed in the image of the supernal man. Higher human consciousness, referred to as Bina, the supernal mother, looks after her children. Higher human consciousness looks down upon the heart, educates it, provides for it, for its clarity, and nurtures it with reminders of its true being. Unfortunately, standard human living often creates interference, and the inner voice of the mother is often blurred. This is the definition of exile. Exile is not a political or a national condition. It is a condition of the psyche, of the mind, of the spirit. The shofar is the channel that reconnects Bina, the mind, with Tiferet, the heart. Not only do we symbolize this by holding the opening of the shofar down towards the heart, there is an entire set of meditative contemplations performed as the sounds of the blast move through the shofar horn. We all pass through cosmic radiation fields at any given moment as they bombard our planet, and which we discussed extensively on Sunday. The power of directed human consciousness can have profound effects upon these fields. Sound waves can be directed by human consciousness through the medium of voice. The tonnage of voice can be elevated and strengthened when projected through the shofar. Therefore, the blowing of the shofar, when performed correctly, along with the appropriate focus of mind, can create a profound effect upon those who encounter the sound waves it projects. In other less scientific terms, those who hear its blasts, in other words, if either the person blowing the shofar or the person hearing the shofar has the knowing understanding of these contemplations, meditations, it unifies the mind and the heart. It unifies the spiritual with the physical. This is what takes place when people react to the sound of the shofar. Inherently, the soul knows that they need to unify mind and heart. And it goes into that contemplative mode of knowing that so that the hearing accomplishes it.
Okay. This is the first time I've ever heard of the shofar being held up downwards rather than upwards. Have you ever heard the sound that way when it's held downwards? And is it a different sound
It depends on how far away you are from the horns opening.
Mm-hmm.
But it affects your soul differently.
Okay.
The reason it's being held upside down, or really right side up, which is the horn is down, is mm-hmm. because it's a mirror image of the upper worlds blowing the shofar, which is where the flow of beneficence is coming from. It goes down, that beneficence. It flows down. It doesn't flow up. And so the effect of having the lower shofar being blown in that same manner connects more easily to the flow of beneficence. If you're blowing up when the flow is coming down, you're blocking the flow.
I always close my eyes when it's blown. We have a fabulous, terrific shofar blower. I know he has a name. And I just breathe it in. I mean,
and I don't mean to be offensive.
No, that's why I'm asking you.
I've heard this from many, many different people. And I can tell you, because I've heard the shofar blown by Rabbi Berg, and I've heard the shofar blown by his sons. And I can tell you, when Satan defeats him in certain of those blows, the Satan is fighting him all the time to limit, to confuse, to not blow it properly. In the Zohar, it says that Rabbi Shimon trained the blower, the shofar blower, for 3 days before Rosh Hashanah. Rabbi Shimon did not blow it, but he trained the person who was blowing it so that his consciousness was connected to the upper worlds. Now, we live in a time when people are not trained like that. So we have to train ourselves like that. What people describe when they say he's a beautiful blowing, and I have heard beautiful blowing, but I have also heard blowing when it is done with the proper kavanah, and it isn't beautiful. It's profound. And I don't mean to disparage the person who's blowing the shofar. I'm sure he's doing the best that he knows how to do. And maybe he has studied. If you're fortunate enough, maybe he has studied the blowing and the kavanah. But the majority of people who blow the shofar, and in most synagogues, they'll bring up many people to blow at the same time because they think everybody should participate. But that's not what the idea is. What Rabbi Bar Sadak is explaining in this essay of about 10 pages is what I learned directly through the Zohar and from Rabbi Berg and the writings of the Ari. It's real consistent what he writes here. He puts it in a way that is more conducive to modern terminology. When you close your eyes and you hear the blows, what is your consciousness? And it's a rhetorical question, Hannah. Each person has to put some consciousness to those blows. And the overall consciousness is best that you're unifying the mind, your consciousness with your heart.
Well, I'll picture in my mind that I'm at Mount Sinai, and you know the thunder, the lightning, and the shofar was blown, and that's what I have my thoughts in my head at the time that it's been blown. Now it's blown one time. Our particular synagogue, they do Slichot just one night, and it's at the close of Shabbat. It starts with Havdalah, and then we do the Slichot prayers. And at the very end, we also change the Torah covers and the Bema covers to white at that time. And the last action is the blowing of the shofar, one blast. And we usually, at least for the last 4 or 5 years, we've had a minion, barely. And those of us who are there, we're all fairly close to each other. And we're usually the ones that, I'm going to say, have been the leaders. Would I be out of order if I told the person about what I've learned, and would he try to blow the shofar with it pointing down?
They're now taking
the piece of challah that's, you know, for the satan.
You've asked a question. Do you want an answer?
Well, yes, I guess so. Yes, I do want an answer. I want your opinion. I know I would have to know the circumstances at the time. It might not be a good time, and I think I would know if it was. But I know the person who's going to do the service, and we share things all the time. And you know, whether or not it would be publicly with the whole group, I would have to make that decision at the time, pinning those things that we know, those four statements of right place and right time and right covenant, et cetera. So, okay, what's your answer or your suggestion?
Have you ever blown a shofar?
I've tried, and I don't do well with it.
It's
mainly because
I don't think
it's really my place. Always allowed, you know.
Let me answer your question. There's a lot more material to go through in this class.
Okay.
Let me answer the question. When you blow a shofar, as you said you have tried, if you change the location of the shofar, the mouthpiece. If you change its location on the lips, it changes the sound, and sometimes it's not even possible for the person to make that adjustment in a short way. He's practiced in the way he wants. If you try and change that without him being given an opportunity to prepare for that with practice, you're going to create problems. So
okay.
I would not mention it to him unless you called him tonight or tomorrow and asked him if he would be willing to practice with it upside down.
Well, my particular shofar, I bought it in 1986. It was my first trip to Israel, And it was I kept looking for one and looking for one, and I never did see one that I really wanted until the very last stop before it was time to catch our plane. And it caught my attention because it had a shin etched into it. But no one has been able to blow it. I couldn't blow it. Tony can't blow it. So I didn't have anybody try it because I was where I was. It was some shop, but I don't know. It might have even been at the airport. I just know I didn't want to leave without having one. And none of the ones that I did see when we were able to be in a gift shop or whatever, none of them spoke to me. And I even asked our chauffeur blower, he was a music major, plays the piano beautifully, but he went into being an attorney rather than focusing on his music, and he couldn't blow it either. So no one can blow this. Now it doesn't have a mouthpiece. Any extra piece. You know how some of them will have a little device in it.
It was never machined. The mouthpiece means that it was machined. They drilled it out so that it was wider, and they prepared the mouthpiece so that it fits better to the lips and it's easier to blow. That's the only difference.
Okay. But I think it's strange that no one has ever been able to blow it. Maybe it's one that needs to be blown down, and it's been waiting for the right time. Okay, thank you.
What I was thinking as well.
Yes.
So I'm going to continue to read.
All right, let me mute.
Hello, can I have a question?
Go ahead.
Okay, my question is, I've never blown a shofar, but is it similar to blowing a trumpet?
Is it the same as blowing a trumpet?
No. Is the technique similar to doing that?
Yes. But
if you've blown a trumpet before, then you might have success blowing a shofar?
Generally speaking, yes, but again, it still takes practice because it's different.
Okay. Thank you.
Continuing to read. The specific focus the mind takes during the blowing of the shofar is called by the Kabbalists Kavanot Meditations. They are a very intricate and detailed set of instructions for the movement of Nefesh energy, Shefa in Hebrew, from its domains above in the highest realms, in the inner recesses of the unconscious mind, to ultimately manifest here on earth. Specifically, within the human heart, which is the head of Zer-Anpin. It is not enough that one have a general conception of this. The duty is in the details. Compare this, if you will, to operating a computer. You can know how to turn on and off a computer and even know how to move its mouse, maybe even how to open a program. Yet can you write the program? Do you understand how to write the program for Windows? Most likely not. Your knowledge of computers is limited. There is only so much you can do with what you know. Granted, you can do some things, but what you cannot do far outweighs what you can. This same example applies to Kavanot meditations. This is an unwritten commentary, but I will expand a little bit. The Kabbalah Center brings all of its various locations from all over the world to one location so that the mitzvah of shofar is done by knowing these kavanot, by knowing, not by listening. I have to stress that. The mitzvah, according to the Torah, is to know the shofar. Most people today feel they hear the shofar. Continuing to read. First, one must have the training to discipline the mind in order to be able to attain a state of focused mentality. Only when the mind can remain focused without distraction for significant periods of time will it be able to attach itself to pure, unadulterated, non-mythical thought and use it to manipulate the energy fields surrounding and penetrating human consciousness. Indeed, a very good Kabbalistic meditator, like the biblical prophets, could use their powers of mind even further to actually manipulate physical matter. Now, I don't want you to get upset or feel that it's not worth going, because even if you do not have anyone in your minyan who has this knowledge, there is someone in the world who does. And all you have to do is focus your mind on connecting to that person. You don't need to have a picture of the person. You don't need to have anything other than the thought that you want to connect to the proper consciousness in hearing the shofar. That is means you have the knowledge of the shofar. Continuing to read. This is how the Kohanim used the combined power of their shofar blasts to topple the walls of Jericho. This is how Eliyahu Hanavi was able to, in essence, create the rain that he was praying for. This is how numerous sages throughout Torah history use their mind powers to create material forms. The stories of golems and animals being created out of the technology taught in the Sefer Yetzirah are far from mythical. There are those who to this day have sufficient education and training to manipulate these forces. And that's who you connect to wherever you are in the world, just by thinking that you want to connect with someone with that knowledge. On Rosh Hashanah, when the time is right, trained human minds make use of specific rituals, and by doing so, create profound psychic effects in collective human consciousness. The blowing of the shofar by those who know what they are doing, according to the secrets of things, is at a subtle level of consciousness heard by everyone around the world. The numerous others blowing their shofars on Rosh Hashanah without the proper mental focus are acting as local amplifiers for the voice emanating from the mouth and the mind, bina, ima, of the properly trained. In conclusion, my purpose in writing this essay was to demonstrate a little of what in Torah circles we call ta'amei mitzvot, the meanings behind the mitzvot. We have for so long made a myth of Torah and religion to the point that many have fallen away from it, dismissing it as nothing more than outdated fairy tales. This is partially the fault of those Torah teachers who themselves do not know the true depths of Torah. How can the student be expected to embrace that which even the teacher does not know? I believe in light of the moment, it is wise to reveal the underlying scientific realities of Torah. In order to dispel the myth, I believe it is prudent for us to understand the significance of the movements of stars and planets, cosmic electromagnetic radiation fields, and their effects upon our planet and its life forms. We need to know how Torah teaches us the science of sound, of prayer, and the power of the human mind, Kavanah, that can tap into and manipulate cosmic fields, and how the performance of mitzvot can actually create and generate a difference in our little, unaware lives here on Earth. We truly do live in such a grander universe than we can imagine. Through our contemplations, we can tap deep inner recesses of our minds, of which we are seldom aware. I pray that I have given you something to contemplate, to think about, or possibly even dream about. When the shofar blows on Rosh Hashanah, clear your mind of the distractions and listen intently to your heart. You might very well hear the voice of Bina, of Ima, speaking within you. What she will be saying, only you will ever know. That is the end of Rabbi Bar Sadok's essay. I'm going to add some additional information for you to contemplate. The traditional Orthodox blowing of the shofar is 101 blows. Essentially, there are 30 blows that connect to Avraham, to Chesed. Those 30 blows are in sets of 10. The 10 are as follows. Tekiya, which is a long blow. Shivarim, which is 3 blows, the same approximately length as the long blow. Tekiya. The 3 blows, the shivarim, is considered a negative energy because it's separated. In front of it is a positive of tekiya, and behind it is a positive of tekiya. That represents 3 blows. Then we do tekiya, trua, tekiya. The trua is 9 blows, and some people do it as 13 blows. So staccato, ba 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 ba. Again, you have 3, tekiya, trua, tekiya. So far we've done 6. And then we do 4, where we mix tekiya, shivarim, the 3, trua, the 9, and tekiya. So that series of 10 blows, we do that three times for a total of 30, connecting to Abraham. But essentially what you've done is connect the first 10 is Abraham of Abraham. The second 10 is Isaac of Abraham, or Giborah of Chesed. And the third is Tiferet of Abraham. With that understanding, you can see how each of the 30, the first 30 is Abraham, the second 30 is Isaac or Giborah, and the third 30 is Jacob or Tiferet. So that if you meditate, concentrate on the Sephirot that is each blow, you are able to make the Kavanah, the mechanism, the knowledge that works for you. Again, the blows are 30 on Abraham, 30 on Isaac, 30 on Jacob, and the last 10 is Malchut, is King David. And then the 101st blow is the Tikiyah Gedolah, which is an especially long, uplifting, growing sound. Now, I've been very quick because it takes a lot of practice, a lot of contemplation, and we usually don't have the time. But as you've seen, we're doing some things in preparing for Rosh Hashanah this year, because when you understand the kind of energy that's this coming year of 5779 is needing, this preparation is really important and will be beneficial. I didn't have the time to lay this out in clear language that you could read. So I'm going to go over it again. I will have the recording up hopefully by tomorrow morning, but certainly by the early afternoon it will be up and can be listened to and studied. The blows of the shofar are done in groups of three, and four. They're done in four different types of blowings. Actually, three different types of blowings. There is the tekiah, the long blast. There is the shevarim, where it's three blasts, three separated blasts. And there is the truah, which is 9 or 13 staccato blasts. And then, so you do three blasts, a positive tekiah, a negative shevarim, a positive tekiah. The same thing with the truah, positive tekiah, negative truah, because it's broken, and a positive tekiah. And then you combine the two negatives with the positive at the front and the positive at the back. Tekiah, shevarim, truah, tekiah. Those 10 blows represent Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferet, for whichever group you're talking about. So if it's the first 10, it would be chesed of chesed of chesed, followed by, that would be tekiah, shivarim tekiah. That would be followed by tekiah, trua tekiah, which would represent gevurah of chesed of chesed, which is followed by the combination tekiah, shivarim, trua, tekiah, which represents tiferet of chesed. That's the first 10 of each 30. Next you have the second 10 of the 30. That would be chesed, the tekiah, shivarim, tekiah. Chesed of givurah of chesed, because we're in the first 30. If we were in the second 30, it would be givurah of givurah of givurah. It is easy to get lost the first time you strive to do this, primarily because the people blowing this way are doing it too rapidly for you to stay focused. And you also, it's done during the silent Amidah, so you really don't know where the person is. So does anyone have any questions?
I guess I have a question. Maybe you can help me with it, with even forming it. The Torah verse, or the verse from the Tanakh that says, blessed are those who know the meaning of the shofar, for they shall walk in the countenance of their God. And it's a long time ago, but when I looked up the words in Hebrew, it, if I'm remembering right, it was trua, was the sound that was being expounded upon.
Correct.
And, okay, and...
And the question is, why do you have 3 and 9, or 3 and 13?
Okay. And walking in the countenance of your... I'm sorry, I thought you were finished.
I wasn't finished because I'm trying to give it to you in an orderly fashion.
Okay.
The mitzvah is to know the shofar. And it does say the word trua. It says, but we don't know what a trua is. We've lost that. What came down to us is true two traditions. One says it's the Shevarim, the 3, and one says it's the Trua, the 9 staccato sound. So we combined it, and that's why we do this pattern of Tekiah, Shevarim, Tekiah. Then, since we don't know if that's correct, we do it tekiah, trua, tekiah, but we're still not sure if it's correct, so we put them together.
Okay.
Now, you started to ask a question and I interrupted you, but you'd asked me to help you formulate the question, and that is the verse that you're mentioning. It says the way you phrased it or paraphrased it, or maybe it's accurate, but I remember the verse. I know what you're asking, which is, why does it say that you would walk in the countenance of your God, right?
Right.
Okay. Zeraham is considered heaven. you're asking, so go ahead and finish your question.
Well, I just wanted to know what you felt countenance meant.
Countenance is the actual word, would be partsuf. It would be panim, faces. It's telling us about the sephirot, that you have to have the consciousness of the sephirot. You can use the patriarchs, Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, because they are chariots for the sephirot.
Mm-hmm.
But the Kavanah is about the sephirot. The countenance is the face, is the partsuf, which is a structure of 10 sephirot within a sephirot. And now you know why we go through the 10 times 10 to get to the 100.
Right. And I think there's a link, too, from the 100 to the green ring, I can't think of what the word is, that we put on our sukkah at Sukkot. It's linked to those. Either it's the word, the Hebrew word for whatever the top is called. You know, the branches that we put up. Yeah. It starts with an S.
The gematria of the Sach is 100.
Okay.
It's Sach is spelled Samach Kaf Kaf. So it's 60 plus 20 plus 20. So you get to 100.
Okay. You said Samach Kaf and what? What was the last one?
And Kaf. Kaf.
Okay.
Okay, I have a question.
Go ahead.
My question is, listening to both of you and Hannah tonight, since you went over all that, the information about the shofar and having the Kavanah to understand that it's about the Sephirot, now that we have that in our brain, does that count as being able to know the shofar?
Yes. But it's better if you can focus your concentration on it. And during this year, we're going to suggest how to do that better for next year. But essentially, yes. The fact that I've described it to you in your consciousness, you have the knowledge. Now you have to manifest that knowledge in a practical way. And I've given you the various forms of Kavanah to try and keep up and do. And Hashem is merciful, so whatever you try, if you're successful, great. And if you're not successful, Hashem's mercy will see that you tried and give you the benefit of the doubt.
And Brandy, when you come, I have a Yemenite shofar, you know, the real long one. I have the one that no one can blow that I spoke about. And then I also have one that we made at a workshop with Chabad, with the children, about 2 years ago. So we can have three we can practice on. Okay, I have one other question.
That's good.
Okay. My other question would be the last of the commentary that you read, that you listen intently with your heart and hear the voice of Bina or Ema speaking within you. What she will be saying, only you will ever know. Well, I think all these years because of that verse, and I mean, it was many years ago. It appeared on a little bitty Rosh Hashanah card. I don't know if you remember the days when Rosh Hashanah cards were very small. You know, they weren't regular greeting card size. And I even laminated the card. I use it as a bookmark in my Psalms book. And so that scripture means a lot to me. And because I looked up the words in Hebrew and then learned that it was Rumah, and have meditating on what walking in the countenance of Hashem. So would that be Bema speaking to me, Ema?
What he is referring to is the meditations that are taught in the Sefer Yetzirah. Those meditations are really traveling tools that take you to different dimensions with different physical laws, with different natural laws, with different entities. And when you have learned to do that, you will, during Rosh Hashanah and during the 10 days up to Yom Kippur, you will travel in those meditations to Bina. And Bina will speak to you, and you will speak to Bina. And you will change the year ahead through that conversation. Now, you can only change it to the extent that humanity can withstand it. So it's not like you can establish a year for you yourself alone. You have to establish it for humanity. It's all part of the connections, all part of the consciousness that you are undergoing the changes through the study of Kabbalah. The question you asked was what you experienced, Bina? Only you can know that answer. I can tell you what my teacher said was many times people will come to them and talk about these wonderful meditations that they have as they first start to experiment with the meditations of the Sefer Yetzirah as taught by what I was taught and what I teach. And my teacher said, they're still meditating and they're still being in the physical world, in the physical plane. They're not getting to the level that they need to get, even though they say that's where they are. They're being fooled. Now, can the people get it elsewhere? You have people in the various Eastern faiths who do meditations, and they go to places, they do the similar things. They don't use the Hebrew letters. They do use sounds that are very similar to the Hebrew sounds, if not being the Hebrew sounds. But I don't know enough about their religion to say, yes, it works, or no, it doesn't. What I do know is what I was taught, what I do know is what I experienced, and I'm trying to teach you how to experience it. But it's a process. It's not something that happens overnight. And it doesn't happen being taught the way most of the conversions that you all have gone through are taught, because those rabbis don't teach it. But you've been studying, Hannah, you've been studying with me for 5-6 years. And this is the first time I have ever taught this. And the only reason I'm teaching it now, because you haven't gone through all of the Sefer Yetzirah classes. The only reason I'm teaching it now is because of the energy that's going to be available to us next year. We are a community, at least I like to think we are a community. And the community has to travel together.
And that's why I don't like to miss a class. I grieve when I do.
I
don't know if grieve
that.
Is the right word, but, you know, I just...
No, I understand it. But we also have to live in the world that we live in. We also all have other responsibilities. You know, I feel badly when people don't come to the classes. I feel badly that it's only a few people who come to the classes. But I also know I'm the one who's creating the condition that people don't come. And I accept that responsibility, and I'm trying to work on changing that. But we live in a difficult world. There's no question about it. So we take it step by step. If you miss a class, you try and listen to the recording. And it's not the same, but it is the same. Because the information is not, it's not the information. It's what you do with the information. What is the difference between wisdom, understanding, and knowledge?
Experience.
Exactly.
It's like telling someone who doesn't know what a banana is, trying to describe it, what it tastes like. They can't understand until they taste that banana themselves.
Correct. It's exactly correct. So we do the best we can, and we're striving to bring the Mashiach, because he'll bring this to a level where everybody will be elevated. But until we are able to bring him, we have to keep walking up those steps. I didn't even plan to discuss the Sefirot and the blowing of the shofar. I was just going to read the essay. But I realized, you know, it's time. It's time each year. I should have done it before, but I didn't. It wasn't that I was hiding it. In truth, I had forgotten that I'd learned it until this night.
Well, we probably weren't ready to hear it.
It's a whole combination. You weren't ready to hear it, but you are now. Now what will we do with it? You know, will you try and focus on that during the listening to the shofar? Your community only has one slichot, but we've been doing it now for 2.5 weeks, and hopefully we'll do it for another two weeks. You know, you're going to be so much more ready than your community that if you stay with your community, they're going to hold you down. By the same token, you don't want to get too far ahead of them, and you want to help them grow. And that means sharing the wisdom, sharing what you've learned. But are they ready? Will they hear you? These are questions that have to be answered before you teach it.
Well, the one person who is going to do the service is also the president of the, you know, the temple board. So I can share things with him. He shares things with me that we know they're, that maybe we can't possibly share with everyone. But
yeah. So
they've always considered me being a little bit on the outside anyway, so they're not surprised.
<laughs> You know. We never fit in. That's just a given.
That's why I say, if you think you're moving to another place, you're going to find the same things there. You know, so there's always going to be someone, you know, that you don't fit with. And, I mean, you know, just that's just the way life is. I finally found out after all these years. But you do what you think you're supposed to do, that you're being led to do at that time, and try to keep your heart with the right intention. You know, not for attention on yourself, or like sometimes you feel like you're not the one that should be doing it. Someone else could do a better job, but you know that you're the one that is to do it. And we just keep on like that. And we make mistakes.
That's okay, Barbara.
Pressure still seems
I've
to
always
bless.
Been a square peg.
I'm sorry, you broke up.
I said, that's okay. You don't have to fit. I've always been a square peg. I never fit anywhere.
Well, you have to understand something, Brandy. Because when you're a square peg and you try and get into a round hole, the square peg does fit in a round hole. But it leaves a lot of space around it. It goes into a larger hole so that the square peg can grow. Now, I know you haven't thought of it quite like that.
No.
But if you have a 1-inch diameter circle, what's the largest square peg that will fit in that circle?
I don't know, half an inch?
It's probably about 3/4, but it's somewhere around that. And you can imagine all that extra space. And you know what happens with space?
Separation.
So there's no empty space is the home of Satan. That's why the desert is the home of Satan. Because it's empty space. No one wants to live there. So it's good to be a square hole. Just grow into the round hole. And move out Satan in the process.
Okie dokie.
You all have
a
beautiful evening.
And you did say Satan was in the liver, right?
Say it again. You broke up.
You said the home of Satan was the liver.
The home of Satan is the liver. Yes, it's actually
okay.
What's that nerve that runs down the leg?
The sciatic.
The sciatic nerve is the home of Satan. But in the body parts, the liver is the home of Satan.
And Brandy, aren't we all getting ready to do a cleanse?
I suppose. Yeah.
Shalom to all.
With Judy's new, you know, with Judy's new business, so it's working.
Right.
You know, it's there. Okay. All right, this is really good. We didn't have any questions to begin, but we certainly had questions in between, didn't we? And thank you.
Yes, you did. You have a beautiful
thank
evening.
You.
Okay, shalom. You too. Bye, Brandy. Good night.
Bye. Bye-bye.